And now to our reading, excerpting Marx's 18th Brumaire and Emmanuel Wallerstein's The Modern World System 4, Centrist Liberalism Triumphant, 1789 to 1914. And this is beginning with the part of the 18th Brumaire we were excerpting was the end, but then it made reference to this December 10 Society, which made some bells bells go off in my head, and because that's exactly what I had been experiencing in micro. So I recommended that we back up and say and investigate this in this December 10 Society. So this is what we're doing. This is the description of the clandestine tactics of Louis Bonaparte. I like how he refuses to call him Napoleon. Quote, "Meanwhile, Bonaparte," says Karl Marx, "hastened to remove the war minister Daupu, to pack him off in all haste to Algiers." Yeah, colonialism. We'll be hearing a little bit more about that when we turn to Emmanuel Wallerstein. "To pack him," and as if we're reading about these economic booms as if colonialism had nothing to do with it. We know that's BS. All right, here we go. "So he was packed off," the war minister, "in all haste to Algiers. And then Bonaparte appointed General Schramm war minister in his place. On November 12th, he sent to the National Assembly a message of American prolixity." And prolix is in speech or writing, using too many words, tediously lengthy. But Marx was nice enough to tell us that himself. "So he sent to the National Assembly a message of American prolixity, overloaded with detail, redolent of order, desirous of reconciliation, constitutionally acquiescent, treating of all and sundry, but not of the question brûlante, burning questions of the moment." As if in passing, he made the remark that according to the express provisions of the Constitution, the president alone could dispense of, administer the army. The message closed with the following words of great solemnity. Quote from Louis Bonaparte. "Above all things, France demands tranquility, but bound by an oath, I shall keep within the narrow limits that it has set for me. As far as I am concerned, elected by the people, and owing my power to it alone, I shall always bow to its lawfully expressed will. Should you resolve at the..." This is why it's so critical that we have the lawful, right? We need every advantage we got in this moment. Let's jump on it. Right to pursue happiness as a people. Anyway, should the people resolve at this session of the General Assembly on a revision of the Constitution, a constituent assembly will regulate the position of the executive power. If not, then the people will solemnly pronounce its decision in 1852. But whatever the solutions of the future may be, let us come to an understanding so that passion, surprise, or violence may never decide the destiny of a great nation. What occupies my attention, above all, is not who will rule France in 1852, but how to employ the time which remains at my disposal so that the intervening period may pass by without agitation or disturbance. I have opened my heart to you with sincerity. You will answer by frankness, with your trust, my good endeavors, with your cooperation, and God will do the rest. You can see why Carl was laughing at this speech. And then he says, the respectable, I'm sorry, they've been hitting me nonstop this whole day, night. Endless, serious biz, nonstop hits. And it is endurance at this point. Trying not to sound too lispy. So then Carl comments, the respectable, hypocritically moderate, virtuously commonplace language of the bourgeoisie reveals its deepest meaning in the mouth of the autocrat of the Society of December 10 and the picnic hero of Seymour and Satory. The burgraves of the party of order did not delude themselves for a moment concerning the trust that this opening of the heart deserved. About oaths, they had long been blasé. They numbered in their midst veterans and virtuosos of political perjury. They were not deceived. Nor had they failed to hear the passage about the army. They observed with annoyance that in its discursive enumeration of lately enacted laws, the message passed over the most important law, the elector law, in studied silence, and, moreover, in the event of there being no revision of the Constitution, left the election of the President in 1852 to the people. The electoral law was the leaden ball chained to the feet of the party of order, which prevented it from walking, and so much the more from storming forward. Moreover, by the official disbandment of the Society of December 10 and the dismissal of the War Minister d'Alpoul, Bonaparte had with his own hand sacrificed the scapegoats on the altar of the country. He had blunted the edge of the expected collision. Finally, the party of order itself anxiously sought to avoid, to mitigate, to gloss over any decisive conflict with the executive power. For fear of losing their conquests over the revolution, they allowed their rival to carry off the fruits thereof. Quote, above all things, France demands tranquility, unquote. This was what the party of order had cried to the revolution since February 1848. This was what Bonaparte's message cried to the party of order. Above all things, France demands tranquility. And my comment, the people will choose totalitarianism over chaos, we are told. Plato said, and I say we are told because that was actually, I heard that said by John McCain in, I think it was 2002 maybe, I forget, I wrote about it in Waking Up. And in my reading of The Open Society, which is an exegesis of the Republic by Karl Popper, I never encountered that thought. So that's why I always say, according to, I mean, we are told, Plato said, the people will choose to tell, but of course, obviously, totalitarianism isn't a word he would use. So that is apparently some broad translation and cited by John McCain. Continuing, Bonaparte committed acts that aimed at usurpation, but the party of order committed unrest, quote unquote, if it raised a row about these acts and construed them hypochondriacally. The sausages of Satory were quiet as mice when no one spoke of them. Above all things, France demands tranquility. Bonaparte demanded, therefore, that he be left in peace to do as he liked, and the parliamentary party was paralyzed by a double fear, by the fear of again evoking revolutionary unrest, and by the fear of itself appearing as the instigator of unrest in the eyes of its own class, in the eyes of the bourgeoisie. I think we have a sense now of the society of December 10. So let's ponder some things before we continue with the 18th Brumaire.